Support for IPR and this podcast comes from Luther College, offering more than 60 areas of study, including the new data science and neuroscience majors, dedicated to preparing students for success in a changing world.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe, and today we are at what used to be the high school in Mount Vernon, Iowa. It's now the First Street Community Center, but we are walking into the old gymnasium, which right now, for the time being, houses a Smithsonian exhibit called Hometown Teams, How Sports Shape America. It's part of a traveling exhibit from the Smithsonian Museum, although it is augmented with local pieces from Mount Vernon, Lisbon, and the surrounding area. And this has been the work of many individuals, but the man behind the idea of bringing this here and the force that made this happen is Joe Jennison. He is here with me now. He is the director of Main Street and Marketing with Mount Vernon Lisbon Community Development Group. Joe, thanks for having us.
I am so honored that you guys came in today. Thank you. You're going to see a huge treat right now, and thank you for being here.
Well, I'm so excited, and the museum exhibit begins immediately because here we are walking into a very old gym, which is so much smaller than the gymnasiums that, of course, we're all used to being in now. So already, this takes us back in time, doesn't it?
It does, and you know, we got a grant from the Linn County Board of Supervisors, so we've been able to update the gym to make it more comfortable for modern audiences. For instance, we just walked down this handicapped accessible ramp that was not here a few months ago before we started putting this together. And then we've got these beautiful walls that were built and painted by volunteers that help us create a more museum atmosphere. But you're right, it's 100% old gym, and that's what makes this exhibit so interesting.
Well, let's walk in.
All right.
So we walk into the gym, and at the heart of this exhibit is the Smithsonian traveling exhibit. And this is a part of a Smithsonian program. Give me a little bit of background.
So the program is called Museums on Main, and it's a program developed by the Smithsonian specifically for little towns like ours that don't necessarily have their own museum. So it took a lot of discussion, a lot of not taking no for an answer. That's a regular thing that goes off throughout this.
Cool.
Yeah, you'll hear a lot of different things. Basketball, tennis, cheers from audiences. Yeah, that's part of this. So it just adds to it.
Absolutely, absolutely.
So the exhibit arrived to us in a semi-truck. There are about 20 of us, plus a team from the Smithsonian that came out and helped us put it all together. The whole point of this is the Smithsonian wants us to tell our own stories along with the Smithsonian exhibit. So what we did, our volunteers, there was a team of 20 that were putting this together. Our volunteers reached out to 38 community school districts, local sports teams, organizations, and 18 of those chose to be a part of the Smithsonian exhibit. And those stories you'll see on the periphery all around the gym here, and we can talk a little bit about that. But it's been an absolute joy putting this all together and hearing these stories and retelling these stories for you all today and for hundreds that have been through in the last few weeks.
Now, this exhibit isn't just going to be in Mount Vernon.
That's
from
correct.
Here, it's going to be here through April 29th, but then it travels to Ottumwa, then Guthrie Center, Jefferson, Ames, and then winds up in Conrad.
Right.
And will each community that hosts this, will they be bringing together their own artifacts?
That's right. That's what makes this so unique and special, is that every community gets to tell their own stories along with it. So, and that, I have to tell you, has been the most enjoyable part of bringing the Smithsonian here. It's not necessarily the stories, which are really cool with the Smithsonian. We were talking about some of them earlier, but also about what we're finding out about our own community. And you know, without a museum in our town, some of these stories might have gone untold. And it's really been exciting. And as it's been up, others from the community have come in and they've said things like, you know, I've got a boxing trophy in my barn if you want it. And I'm always like, absolutely. If you've got a story to tell, let's bring it in here so people can see it and hear it and touch it and get to know the people who tell our own stories of hometown sports heroes.
Well, I want to start with Iowa stories then. Why don't you show us around a little bit? Let's talk about some of those stories you've collected.
So I'm going to take you to my very favorite piece in this whole exhibit right now. All right? So we're standing in front of the Cornell College exhibit. And Cornell College, you know, is based here in Mount Vernon. The picture on the left that you're seeing is a picture of the 1947 wrestling national champions of the entire country. So at the time, there were no divisions in sports like 1A or in wrestling like 1A, 2A, 3A. One team at the end of the year won the whole thing. So this little team from Little Mount Vernon, Iowa, Little Cornell College, boarded a train for San Francisco, and in San Francisco, they ended up winning the national title in wrestling. There's a picture of them here on the table, and there's also a picture of them returning. There's a big parade out in my main street there. Those buildings all are still standing, and they're all decorated.
And it says the Dream Team of 1947.
Yeah, they were known as the Dream Team. So over here, this is 2017, last year. So this is the current wrestling team, and to honor the team from 70 years earlier, they recreated the photo, and you can see that they exactly are representing each person on the original team, and their faces are tried to put them in the same places. See, the one guy has his hand on the other guy's shoulder, and you can even see someone's doing a photo bomb in the back of each photo.
That's very cool.
I love this. So this photo was taken, a 2017 photo was taken last spring, and we put these together because we knew that this exhibit was coming. And so we blew those up really big, and it becomes our main focal point here. So.
All right. Well, we're going to look around the rest of the gym, but we don't have it to ourselves anymore. You've got a group of kids coming in, so we'll let you go and greet the kids.
Okay, let's do that.
This is a large group of 7th graders. They're visiting the exhibit from nearby Lisbon, and Lisbon sports are well represented in the exhibit as well. All right, now that the kids are exploring the museum on their own, the exhibit on their own right now, let's move on to, this is a very, very important part of the exhibit, because you have partnered with Dan Gable, who, of course, a gold medal Olympic wrestler, and the accolades could fill a page. But how did you connect with Dan Gable? And tell me a little bit about what he brought to this exhibit.
Well, after much discussion, Dan Gable agreed to be the honorary chair of this exhibit throughout the entire state. So the Dan Gable exhibit actually goes to all the other towns in the state that are hosting this. So he lives maybe as much as 9 miles from here, very close. So all of these things in here come from his personal collection. And we're really excited and glad to have him. What we've got right over here, this is a singlet that he wore in 1972 at the Olympics. You'll see a picture of him there winning that gold medal. This picture that you see here, and it's a picture of him with kind of a sad face, as we can describe it for your listeners. This picture actually came off his wall. It means a lot to him. So it says right here in the exhibit, undefeated for 181 straight matches, he lost his final match. And the quote that goes along with that is this: after 7 years of being undefeated in high school and college, I lost my final match, and then I got really good. The exhibit goes on to talk about his Olympic career and his coaching career, which have been stellar, as we know.
He keeps a picture of himself after he was just devastated by that loss on his wall at all times.
Yeah. I thought that was interesting, too, but it certainly shaped him. Yeah. So that's how you get to be champion, I guess, huh?
Now, as I've walked through the exhibit, both the Smithsonian part of the exhibit and your part, I find that, I mean, a lot of this shows us sports that, of course, we know and love today, but it'll show the kids who are here today these sports as they've never seen them before. I mean, was that an important part of this to make sure that they can make that connection between, like, the football game that you see today or the baseball game that you see today and what it once must have been?
Well, I think that, yes, that is important. You saw me probably telling them the story about Jack Trice. And, you know, we all know the story of Jack Trice. But I find a lot of people, young and old, that come in here, know the stadium but don't know the story behind it. And when I stop and make sure they read and get the story, I think they're really moved. It's a tragic but important story that we continue to tell.
Now let's walk over and look at the Jack Trice part of the exhibit.
So this exhibit came from the African American Museum of Iowa, and they put this together. The story of Jack Trice is on the left, and there's a really nice picture of him from 1922.
And for people who don't know the story, tell us once more.
Sure. So on the right here, we've got this big, beautiful picture of Jack Trice Stadium. But the truth is, it was named after a real man. So this is Jack Trice here in 1922. He would have been the first African-American football player at Iowa State University. It was then called Iowa State College, all right? His very first game was October 6, 1923. In college-level football at the time, teams often refused to play against a team with African-American players. On his very first game, he's playing against the University of Minnesota in Minneapolis, the one African-American player on that entire field. It says right here, during the second play of the game, he had injured his shoulder but continued to play. It was later discovered that it was a broken collarbone. During the third quarter play, Trice tried to make a block and was stampeded by several University of Minnesota players. He died from his injuries a few days later. So it says here that it's been a question whether Trice was a victim of racial violence or an unfortunate casualty of what was then an overly brutal and unsafe sport. The items that you see in the case with the story and the picture come from a local antique dealer, and they did not belong to Jack Trice, but they were a football helmet, cleats, and a football of the era. And I thought it was important to show, if for nothing else, for people to see what kind of protection he would have had with this helmet. So it's a very light leather helmet. I was told at the time they were built, these helmets, these in quote helmets, so that the player could get up off the field, fold it up and put it in his pocket before he went home. So that's all the protection he had during that game.
Basically wearing a light hat.
Yeah.
Well, over here you have a copy of the letter that he wrote the night before this game. And
correct.
And this is an extraordinary letter that mm-hmm. I've had the opportunity to read before, but it shows that he knew how much was at stake in this game.
Mm-hmm. Well, it says right here, "The honor of my race, family, and self is at stake. Everyone is expecting me to do big things, and I will." Yeah, it wasn't the big thing that he expected, but there you go. Here's Jack Trice Stadium now.
We're in Mount Vernon today visiting hometown teams, How Sports Shape America. It's a Smithsonian Institution museum that's traveling around the state. It's augmented with local sports history here in Mount Vernon. And I'm talking with Joe Jennison of Mount Vernon Lisbon Community Development Group, one of the people instrumental with bringing it to Mount Vernon and Iowa. We'll continue in a moment. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio.
Support for IPR and this podcast comes from Luther College, offering more than 60 areas of study, including the new data science and neuroscience majors, dedicated to preparing students for success in a changing world.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Today, we're in Mount Vernon, touring hometown teams, How Sports Shape America. It's a Smithsonian Institution Museum on Main Street exhibit that's in Mount Vernon through April 29th. My tour guide today is Joe Jennison.
In the back, I want to show you this exhibit that was put together by the University of Iowa. Their women's program there put this together. Can we come and talk about that?
Yeah, let's do that.
So we're standing in front of this exhibit, and it's a history of 6-on-6. This year marks the 25th anniversary of the last game of 6-on-6 in Iowa.
6-on-6 girls basketball.
That's correct. And the exhibit goes on to talk about the history of women's sports altogether. There's many things in this that are really interesting to read and write. There's a picture of Gertrude Ederle becoming the first woman to swim the English Channel. And then Helen Willis down here, a tennis player. There's Babe Diedrichsen is put in this. And then I always bring people to this right over here. 1928, the perceived exhaustion of athletes following the 800-meter race at the Amsterdam Olympics leads to the banning of long-distance track events for women until 1960. So from 1928 to 1960, the Olympics didn't allow women to run in long-distance track events because for whatever reason they felt they weren't strong enough or whatever to handle it. We all know better now, don't we?
But it's you think about how recent 1960 was. This is not ancient history by any means.
32 years it took them to figure it out. And I always tell people when they're looking at this, if you look straight across from where I am right now, there's a picture of Jenna Higgins, who is a national javelin championship from Mount Mercy University. There's a picture of her, and you look on the guns on her, and you hear this kind of thing, and you know how untrue those sorts of things are. But it's really neat to me that they're put here right in the crossfire, so you can see it as you read this stuff.
Well, and it's interesting, too. I mean, 6-on-6 girls basketball was developed to protect girls from the rigor of the 5-on-5 game. Mm-hmm. It's now a thing of the past, but that part of our history is so special to so many Iowans, and it was such an important part of the culture for so many Iowan girls growing up. And actually, this coming weekend, the Women's Archive is going to be here collecting stories, right?
That's right. They're here April 21, 10 to 6, and April 22, noon to 4. So they'll have a table set up, not inside the exhibit, but outside of the exhibit. So if people have stories to share with the Iowa Women's Archives about 6-on-6 or other sports-related topics, they're happy to talk to you. If you want to bring something that you have, memorabilia from your time playing 6-on-6, they'd love to have it. So.
Oh, that's very cool. And yeah. Now, speaking of people showing up, and bringing you memorabilia, you mentioned this boxing trophy. I want to see the boxing trophy that came out of the barn.
Yeah, right over here.
Okay, so here it is. It's a big boxing trophy. Tell me what the background is.
So Rick Alger is a local person. He came to the exhibit, and of course, what we're standing in front of right now is the Lisbon Wrestling exhibit. So it is prolific. When we first contacted them, they said they wanted to bring every one of their wrestling trophies that they've ever won to put it on exhibit. And I'm like, great, I'll put together a little trophy case for you, and we'll put them on exhibit. And they're like, no, Joe, you're going to need an entire room because they have so many. So we sent a photographer over to shoot them all, as you can see here.
Oh, my and goodness. There are dozens.
And then they brought the two latest ones and the first two that you can actually see here on exhibit. So in now with this wrestling exhibit, Mr. Alger brought this boxing trophy, and he had the 1980 state AAU boxing champions listed, and you'll see they're all relatives. Almost all of them are Algers here, and there's a nice picture of them winning, and they brought a nice jacket and a medal that came from that time. So all these things he had in his personal collection, and he contacted us and said, I think these need to be on display, and I couldn't agree more. I had no idea that we had a boxing history here. We're very well known in our communities for our wrestling history, but I didn't know we had boxing history here.
So this has been a real learning experience for you, too.
Yeah, I love hearing the stories, and I love sharing the stories. Nothing about my job I love more than sharing what I love with people who come to visit my community. And this is just a really great opportunity for us to do that.
You've had a lot of people through here, people just coming to visit when it's open, but you know, we've got a school group here now, and you've had a lot of school groups come and see the exhibit. What do you want people to take away from it?
Well, I think that it's an opportunity for everyone to think about their own stories, you know, and then it's an opportunity for all of us to think about how we're going to share our stories, how we're going to pass them down. You know, who is recording our culture? Where is that going to be stored in the future? You know, if we hadn't opened the door to this boxing trophy, would it have become a thing of the past? Would it become something you'd throw in a garbage bin or something? Where would those stories be? And I think that all of us need to really think long and hard about how we're telling our stories and what we have to tell and share with others. It's important.
So like this boxing trophy that may have wound up in a dumpster somewhere, you have helped to uncover stories that really had been lost. Let's go talk about a baseball story over here.
I'd love to tell that, yeah.
Here we are in the baseball section of your exhibit, and there are a lot of different stories told here, but this is one that really had been lost to history. You've titled this Deaths on the Diamond. Tell me about that.
Yeah, so Amy White is a Lisbon librarian, and she came in one of the first days, and she said, there's a story that I really think you need to put in here. And I said, well, of course we would take anything. You know, you got a boxing trophy, and you want to bring it up, I'll take it. And the story that she told me is about a gentleman in 1949. He's a high school kid playing baseball. And there's another gentleman that lived in Wyoming, near here, right? Wyoming, Iowa. And there was a baseball game with a pitcher who was from Wyoming. An errant pitch hit this young man in the head, and it ultimately killed him. And the story is very well told and written by this man, Bill Nolan. But I always recommend people reading this. It tells this story. And the crazy thing about this story is it was less than a year later that this gentleman from Wyoming, Iowa, was at another high school baseball game and beamed another kid in the head and killed another kid. Totally accident. And the story in here goes on to tell about both of the young boy's families. And the one young boy on his deathbed was pleading with his mother, don't blame the pitcher. It was all just a crazy accident. And the town came together to encourage this boy to go back and play again. And it's a very well-written story, and one of those stories that would be lost to history if it wasn't here. So the young man from Lisbon who died in 1949, his sister was in last week. Wow. And she left a little note. That was my brother. Thank you for putting this here. A story that we wouldn't have if we didn't have this place to host it, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, let's walk over here. You've got an archery target up over here. Let's take a look at that. Suddenly, we're here in a very quiet exhibit again. The seventh graders from Lisbon have gotten back on the bus and headed out. But here we are. We've walked over to the archery target spotted across the gym.
Well, if you look close at this archery target, it is signed. So how many of you own a signed archery target? I don't know.
No one.
Yeah.
None of us.
So over here, what we're standing in front of are eight video screens. These are actually videos that were put together by a class at Mount Vernon High School during their J term, where they identified eight different local heroes, and they told their stories on video, and those are what's playing here in the back behind me. And you can put on headphones and listen to them. They tell the story of Shirley Ryan, this volleyball coach that coached for many, many years. And then over here on the other end, we've got Logan Kelly. So Logan Kelly is the first person in the world to shoot a perfect 300 in 3D with archery. He has two world records and two world champion runners-up and three national titles. And get this, he's all of 16 years old. So this young man and his family came in Saturday specifically to see his exhibit, but all of the exhibits, and I asked him to sign our target for us. So you can see an actual Logan Kelly signature, ladies and gentlemen, on an archery target if you want to come to our exhibit. I have a picture of him and his family standing here in front of it. And I pulled him aside and I said, how wonderful for you. Your exhibit is directly across from the Jackie Robinson exhibit in the National Smithsonian exhibit here. And what a thrill it is for him to be put alongside people like that of that stature. So,
yeah, you know, as this travels around the state, I realize that some of the Iowa pieces are going to travel around the state with it. All of these stories are such great Iowa stories. Mm-hmm. But why focus on local sports, just your community's local sports, instead of putting together an entire Iowa sports exhibit? Why do you think it's so important to tell these stories?
Mm-hmm. Well, first off, they're regional stories. So they're not just Mount Vernon and Lisbon. So we've got Mount Mercy University here. We've got the Colonels represented here. We've got Xavier High School. They put a nice exhibit together. I think it is important that people can come here and see themselves in a Smithsonian exhibit, to see their brothers, to see their fathers. I mean, there's a really nice Mount Vernon football exhibit over here. I can't tell you the number of kids that have gone over there and found their father, photos of their father, you know, their father's name or something in those exhibits. Or this right next to it is the volleyball story and their mothers winning state volleyball. Who knew that my mother was, you know, such a great volleyball player when she was in high school, but there are pictures. I know some of these people. I walk by them on the street all the time, and it's nice to see them in a time that I didn't know them, you know, when they were young and thin and beautiful. So, yeah. So it's nice that it's all here for all of us to see. It's recorded, you know.
Makes me want to travel to all the sites that are going to be in Iowa to see all of those regional stories as well.
Yeah, I'm kind of excited to do that too. You know, I've gotten so attached to this exhibit and to telling these stories. I think I'm going to miss it in 2 weeks. It's going to be kind of hard to get up in the morning and not come in here and zhuzh the exhibits and put them back together after, you know, 30 seventh graders have been through. But
And Joe, this is an exhibit that, or a program that hasn't been in the state of Iowa for 15 years. And you worked extremely hard to bring this program back to Iowa. Tell me where that all started for you.
Mm-hmm. Well, it wasn't just me. I need to tell you that. I work with 20 volunteers in my community who put in a lot of time, blood, sweat, and tears into this as well. And, you know, it was 4 years ago. I went to a conference, a national Main Street conference in Atlanta. And there was a woman who had my job in a little town, I think in South Carolina. And at this conference, she was telling the story about how she got the Smithsonian to come to her little town. And that seemed to really hit me. It was like, well, if she can do it, of course we can do it. So here it is 4 years later, and we've made it happen. We have all made it happen. We're very proud of it.
But it was not an easy path.
It was not an easy path. So I made an original phone call to Carol Harsh is her name, and she's the head of this program at the Smithsonian. She picked up on my first call, and I don't know what it is, but the two of us clicked. We've become good friends. She's been here 3 times to my little town. We talked about what it would take. So originally, she was like, the only way we can do this is working through this certain department of the state. For whatever reason, that department was not willing to play with us. So we started trying to come up with other ways to do this. And it was just a regular story about not taking no for an answer, you know? And I kept calling back Carol, and what have you got now, Joe? And I'd come up with different ideas. What if we got this? What if we did this? What if I paid more? What if we... And we finally got Main Street Iowa, the group that oversees 54 Main Street communities in Iowa. They're based in Des Moines, to host this for us. So these 6 communities that it's going to are all Main Street communities. And of course, it's going to premiere right here in Mount Vernon before it goes to the other ones. And I'm very proud of that.
What made you so determined to bring it here? 4 years of those phone calls and connections and the pushing and the asking and trying to make things happen. Why was it so important for you to make this happen here?
I know my community. I know that we have some really great stories to tell. And I knew that we can do this. I knew my volunteers. You know, I had 2 board members from the very first moment I came back from that conference assuring me we can do this, we can find a way to do this, you know. And over those years, there were fundraisers, you know, there was so much work to pull this together. Several committees were contacting, you know, 38 organizations in the 8 county area around Mount Vernon and Lisbon. And, you know, people that we were contacting had no idea what this was. It had never been here in 15 years. It was hard to try to tell them, well, the Smithsonian exhibit's going to be here, and your story is going to be alongside them in there. They couldn't quite wrap their heads around it. And I think that if we were to get this tomorrow or the next day or next year, I think we'd get a lot more than 18 groups to be a part of it, because now we know what it is, right? But it's one of those things, and that is something we do in Mount Vernon often. We become the first to offer some kind of a program. We were the first to do a chalk festival, you know? We were the first to do a zip code day.
Zip code day? What is that?
Our zip code is 52314. So May 23rd, 2014, we had the state's first zip code day. Yeah. We had a parade. The 5th graders, followed by the 2nd graders, followed by the 3rd graders, followed by the 1st graders, followed by the 4th graders. And then we all stood in 52314 formation, and we had a historic photo taken from the rooftops of all of us on Main Street. I'll give you a copy of that picture. You'll love it.
Yeah, I will love it. I've got to wait several years before my community zip code day is going to come around. So after all those years of work and rallying the volunteers and bringing people together, was there a moment for you where you felt the payoff, where you felt it was all worthwhile?
Well, I do remember that very first day we opened. And, you know, a lot of people that I know and trust and love that live in this community came on that very first day. And I remember saying to all of them, this is what pride looks like right here. This is what pride looks like. I am just so incredibly proud of what we all pulled off despite the odds. So proud.
Well, Joe, it's really impressive. It's
thank
a wonderful
you.
Exhibit.
Thank you.
Well done.
Yeah, thank you. It's a pleasure having you guys here. Yeah. Come again, will you?
Yeah.
Oh, we have festivals all summer. You ever been to Chalk the Walk?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah, good. Yeah, come back. We'll do some more stories.
I've been talking with Joe Jennison of Mount Vernon Lisbon Community Development Group. He's the man behind bringing this exhibit to Mount Vernon. It's called Hometown Teams, How Sports Shape America. It will be in Mount Vernon through April 29th and then moving on to Ottumwa, Guthrie Center, Jefferson, Ames, and Conrad. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio.